Contrary to popular wishes, rather than getting better audio quality, this episode's brought to you on tin cans. That's right, it's episode 3 of season 2 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we're talking a new Linux kernel while Apple takes on Android via HTC. We report back on our awesome custom Linux distros. And we reveal why we are so negative about Linux.
No, we're not. You're wrong, Paul.
But this episode particularly, we want to bring to you an awesome subscriptions deal. And it's not our normal deal. Don't fast forward. This is an awesome deal. We put it on the website because we're trying to highlight it. It's really cool. For approximately $104 US, or what, £50? I forget how much it costs. Yeah, whatever it is. However much it is. You will get access to 2,100 approximately PDFs of tutorials, features, reviews, all sorts from our magazine from the past. It's a lifetime of Linux learning in your pocket.
That is a lot.
It's downloadable DRM-free PDFs, and if that's not good enough for you, it comes with a 3 years print subscription to Linux format mailed to your door.
DRM-free.
You just get a load of PDFs to do with as you please.
Cool. So you can copy it, you can have it on
You can
of your
copy it. Computers. Yeah, it doesn't matter. They're yours for life to keep.
You can put it on your
2,100 PDFs. So if you want to learn more, go to tuxradar.com/subscribe. Check it out. Don't miss it. It's not going to last long. It's an awesome, awesome deal. Check it out.
It's time for, as always at the start, the news. Linux kernel 2.6.33 has been released, which normally wouldn't be that exciting.
Oh, no, it's normally exciting.
Graham's obviously very excited by this.
I think the cool kids call it .33, though.
.33. Not even, don't mention the 2.6, because, there's not going to be a 2.8 for
anyway,
a while,
we can
assume. So this includes official support for the Nintendo Wii and GameCube. Not official from Nintendo, of course,
but it's
actually the hardware support.
So not official support then, really.
Official Linus Torvalds support for these machines.
Are you saying he's got a Wii?
I presume, or a GameCube, or some sort of hybrid of the two.
You said Wii.
And, yes, another feature is Nouveau NVIDIA driver.
That looks really good.
That is awesome.
Yeah. For all the,
well, explain what it is quickly.
It's an open source driver for NVIDIA graphics cards.
Accelerated.
It is.
Yes, and it's completely developed by the community, I believe.
It is. Yep.
So it can be developed indefinitely.
It's free software.
It's fully free.
It works on older GPUs than the actual official NVIDIA one
than
does.
The ones NVIDIA supports, yeah.
So it's better. Mm. Although, obviously, I don't think for the newest GPUs, you won't get maximum performance from Nouveau. You used to get the absolute best. You know, if you want to play your 3D games that don't actually exist on Linux, if you want to play them, you have to use the NVIDIA driver. But they don't exist. So all those spinny cube effects, Nouveau.
Yes.
How have they done it? How have they reverse engineered? No, presumably they haven't.
Black magic.
I mean, I remember years ago before the proprietary driver, this would have been just gold dust.
You know? It would, yeah.
It is great news.
It's incredible.
It's a good step in the right direction.
Well, the ATI one already exists, remember?
Yeah.
And there's one for Intel already. Intel is actually official. Which means for the first time ever, we now have out-of-the-box 3D support for every GPU, which is incredible.
Yep, so there's no excuse for the X server now to fail and leave you in text
mode. I'm sure there'll be all new excuses for that.
Like, open off it.
No, what are you complaining for?
Sorry.
So this is in the kernel, then. You don't have to download and compile any faffing about
it. It's as standard in 33.
Well, awesome. When the distros include points.
Well, it's been backported to .32.
Has it?
Because it's in Fedora now, and it'll be in Lucid.
Excellent. Ubuntu.
Because Lucid won't have 33, almost certainly have 32, the previous version without Nouveau, but they've made Nouveau work, which is cool.
Ah, respect to them.
So out of the box, all three, let's just bring on the awesome.
And there are better drivers for VMware's graphics chip as well. It's emulated graphics chip, so we should have a
Well, that is good, because again, it means Linux out of the box looks great.
Yeah, even on a virtual machine.
Accelerated.
So,
well, because they've done all this, I think if you've got a Mac and you run Windows, it's hardware accelerated, I think, Windows.
In VMware.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, they emulate some sort of direct 3D compatible graphics card.
Yeah, they even get error working,
They get error working, so I think that's the same idea here.
This is really good, then. So people who try Linux can see Compiz and all the other...
That's the hope.
Yeah.
That's the hope.
So that's pretty cool. 2.6.33.
.33, Mike.
.33.
You're one of the cool kids, too.
Meanwhile, Ubuntu 10.04 will support the iPhone and iPod Touch out of the box for dragging files across and photos and music.
So
apparently,
as soon as the iPad is released.
As soon as the iPad is released.
Oh no, that says iPod, doesn't it? Never mind.
Well, the iPad being quite a large iPod Touch means that it probably should be supported.
Interestingly, I guess it won't be compatible with the 3.2 firmware upgrade. Is my guess,
possibly,
which might happen
not.
At about the same time, which might break support.
Mm. Well, presumably it's going to be lib iPod, isn't it? I'd like to think.
The music, the synchronizing with the music database is GTK Pod.
That's old, isn't it?
What, GTK Pod?
Yeah, it's old.
Which is the current one?
The
lib iPod handles the USB protocol.
Oh, I see.
And I think it's GTK Pod that handles the music syncing.
Right.
There's two GTK based.
Yeah, because GTK Pod worked in the past, and of course Apple. They change the hash sums and stuff like that to break things just because they can.
Which they will do.
Which they will carry on doing. And as long as it's patchable.
Yeah.
Do you think Apple will break it just for Ubuntu? So, I mean, you can see what they were doing with Palm because that's a commercial competitor, but Ubuntu.
They'll break it. Because they can. Because they can.
Of course they will, because it's their ball.
But it's a great feature. And I probably won't upgrade. If I had an iPhone, I wouldn't upgrade it just to keep the ability to put music on
it. If you did have an iPhone.
It'd be great.
Using Lucid Links.
I mean, just the other day I bought an album that I'd love to put on my iPhone if I had one.
Well, there's been another bit of controversy that the Canonical Music Store, or the Ubuntu One Music Store, is going to supply MP3s. As opposed to Ogg Vorbis or FLAC. Their reason for this is, acquiring popular songs in this format was not possible at this time. So Canonical have a deal with various music companies.
Seven Digital.
What wasn't possible?
Any sort of free formats.
Acquiring popular music in Ogg Vorbis or FLAC.
What are the insurmountable barriers to turning stuff into Oggs?
I think if you start...
If they listen to... What podcast was it when I discovered Packpole? Why am I more leet than the Ubuntu developers?
You are more leet than Mark Shuttleworth.
I'm in a website today and everything.
With embedded YouTube.
I don't think anyone would want Ogg if it was Ogg that was made for an MP3.
It is lossy.
What, you think they get the MP3s? Well, I think it sets a very bad example. I'm pretty disappointed by it. So I don't want to complain about it, because they're free to do whatever they want to do. But
you do want to complain about it, don't you?
Actually, I do.
I do.
But you keep kicking me.
Yes. MP3.
MP3.
MP3 and Yahoo by default.
And you're only allowed to download it 3 times.
Mm. Oh, no.
They are DRM-free, these songs, which should be clear. But...
So this, what they've done is actually quite interesting. It requires an Ubuntu One account, because it's the Ubuntu One music store. So you have your Ubuntu One account, which gives you 2 gigs of storage in the cloud, in Ubuntu's cloud. So what happens is when you buy a song in Rhythmbox, it automatically transfers it to your cloud.
Okay.
And that doesn't count towards your downloads.
Right.
That's one download from there to the cloud. So you can get it from the cloud to your desktop as much as you want to. But if you lose it off the cloud, you have to download it again and you lose another download
account.
It's not
so bad.
It's not so bad, no. It's not so bad. And you get 2 gigs free. So it's not terrible.
Should be called Ubuntu 2 then, shouldn't it?
What kind of music? Do we know what kind of deals they have? Is it going to be as wide?
Muzak?
Big label music, apparently.
Is it big?
Yeah, it's Seven Digital. So it's all the major labels.
That's quite, but, quite good.
Doesn't iTunes, is it 256k AAC?
I don't know.
I think it's a pretty high, well, it's very high quality music they provide.
Yeah.
Not in terms of actual content, but the quality is quite high. And I think 7 Digital is the same bitrate in MP3.
So it's 225 MP3?
256 MP3, I think. I think. Which is lame. And it's not Magnatune either. Magnatune, if you haven't been there, listeners, is a great website, magnatune.com. You get FLACs, you get OGGs, you get MP3s, you get AACs, you have whatever you want. You can share it up to 3 friends every album you buy. You pay between $10 upwards, depending on how much you want to pay for the album. You can listen to it all before you buy it. You can stream it for free. It's Creative Commons music as well. It's a really, really good site. So, magnatune.com. They're not evil.
No, they're brilliant.
A non-evil company. And the other third big news story is that Apple has sued HTC, the mobile phone maker, which normally wouldn't be of particular interest to us as Linux users, but Apple has attacked HTC, saying that their phones infringe around 20 patents, but a lot of these are to do with Android rather than the hardware. So there are things like a patent on unlocking the device using a gesture across the screen. So on the iPhone, you swipe your finger.
Really?
And then there's list scrolling and document translation and other things. So Steve Jobs was a bit miffed when Google got into the phone game with their Nexus One.
Yeah.
He said, you know, we didn't get into the search business, so why did they have to get involved?
Allegedly,
yes. Not absolutely proven, but he's not denied that, so...
he's not denied it, that wasn't true.
Fail.
What can you say, really? It's insane, isn't
That's
it?
That's absurd.
Wasn't he really quoted as saying as well something along the lines of, you know, we don't want other companies capitalizing on our hard work, you know, in discovering all these great things.
He says we love competition, but they should build their own innovations,
Swiping something.
But the touchscreen it's not Apple's invention, is it?
The touchscreen isn't, but certain methods for doing certain things on it.
So using the touchscreen is Apple's. The touchscreen itself.
Correct.
If you touch the touchscreen and move your finger, that's what they're saying is theirs.
Well, no. If it's one of those, is that the patent applications are chock full of legalese and complicated methods. So they describe it as, you know, the method for accessing the accessible abilities of the computing device in order to facilitate the making of phone calls by moving your digits across the surface in a circular motion. And this kind
of
business.
In the hot seat.
Yeah. So,
but this will never stand up in court, though, because we don't have software patents in this country.
Just like one matter.
In the US,
purchases.
They do. Yeah. They do in the US. And HTC is a worldwide company with lots of Android sales in the US too. And that means that they're in trouble because software patents, they already have these patents. You might say that's a stupid patent. Doesn't matter. They have these patents. Yeah. They've been granted the right to these patents. So that's what they're trying to fight.
Sorry, Mike. Isn't it one of the reasons why HTC was reluctant to stick the multi-touch in the Nexus One?
And they did.
US?
And a month later, they get sued.
Because this just sounds... I mean, that's a killer feature as far as the iPhone is concerned. I can see why Apple are trying to protect it.
Yes, well, everybody's suing one another at the moment in the mobile space anyway, so it looks like perhaps this is some way to shake it all down. So everybody will get agreements and pay one another a bit of it and settle, and, you know, then we'll go on for another 5 years until the next major.
Well, Google's taking quite a smart stance. I mean, their response was, we stand behind our Android operating system and the partners who have helped us to develop it, because presumably that's safer than standing in front of the partners. Because they'd get sued.
We'll see what this means. But, Linux is growing rapidly on mobile phones in the form of Android. And
maybe they should just abandon the US market. That would be great.
Well, it'd help topple software patents, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. That's the main problem
here. They
can
keep their iPhone.
Software patents are dumb. And that's becoming increasingly obvious. But what I'm really looking forward to is all those people who have been saying, you know, Mono's got FUD patents, maybe submarine patents, maybe. Android now definitely has. Yeah. Go on, you Android buyers. Toss them in the bin. Let's see you live up to what you've been saying all this time. Throw them away and I'll laugh at you.
If you use Android but hate Mono, then you're in a bit of a quandary.
Then you're a wrong person.
Yeah, you've got it mixed up.
No, you're a great person.
No, we can be cynical about that.
Right, it's now time for our increasingly old hat, You Dare Us section, which 2 weeks ago we bravely set ourselves the task of creating a SUSE studio distribution each, and then letting our brave listeners download it or look at it and judge which is best. Now, you can probably tell that it's a bit of a fail on this one already, because we haven't got them there yet, but we have been trying. And what kind of success have we had?
Well, firstly, what is SUSE Studio?
Well, SUSE Studio is Novell's online distribution building mechanism through a web browser. It's very impressive, very nice technology. You can basically build your own SUSE flavor distribution. You can choose the packages, change images, and you can get complicated as well if you want to, but it doesn't have to be like that. It's very neat if you haven't tried it, but not that neat.
As we'll soon find out.
What was the main philosophy behind your distribution, say, Paul, or Andrew, or Mike?
It's a battle of the wills.
Well, I started a few days ago, so my goal was to make a lightweight XFCE-based distro, because that's what I like. So I started off with a minimalist X install. You've got these different patterns. You can start off based on a GNOME system or a KDE system, but I didn't want any of that stuff, so I said, right, just give me a plain X system and I'll build my stuff on top of that. So I added XFCE, Google Chromium, AbbeyWork, Numeric, XChart, VLC, kind of apps that I like. I wanted to spice it up a bit by adding the Advanced Window Navigator, and that wanted to install 135 megs of packages, including Evolution Data Server for a window navigator. So I tried CairoDoc. I wanted to have a proper display manager instead of XDM so people could log in and choose a desktop, but that wanted to install all of GNOME, including Nautilus, for a display manager. So I ended up doing three builds of it, and eventually I got a distro that I kind of like, but I've had to include GNOME with it just because I wanted a proper display manager.
And
so.
The builds take a long time, don't they? They take about half an hour or 45 minutes.
They do. I mean, it is a really cool system, and with more time, if I was really serious about it, I could customize it a lot more because you can overlay files using SUSE Studio. So you can customize it any way you want.
And run scripts.
And fix all this stuff. But so, yeah, I was a bit miffed that having GDM requires you to install all of GNOME, which is a bit silly.
Because it's actually an individual package in the list, isn't it? There's no reason.
Yeah. Zubuntu uses GDM, but it doesn't require any GNOME nonsense. That was a shame. But otherwise, it was good fun.
Well, my great philosophy behind my distribution was a developer's distribution, because I've always wanted a Linux distribution that had all of the development libraries and all of the tools required to just build applications without grabbing everything. So I did things like type _dev into the search box, which came up with like 7,000 packages. I selected all.
So that's why your build took 4 hours.
It wouldn't let me install everything. Yeah, it wouldn't let me green monster distribution.
200 packages at a time.
Exactly. So I then had to. They're listed by popularity, which is quite neat. Packages, all of the packages when you do a search. So I was able to install the top 200 most popular development packages. But like you, I ran into a problem with desktops because I wanted it to be based on KDE. And I thought I'd only installed KDE, but when I came around to testing it, I ended up with GDM and GNOME.
It will work its way in. You know, you install PostFix or something and you will get GDM.
Evolution Data Server.
Yeah. It's a really poor-looking GNOME as well. I don't know why, considering SUSE's so strong on KDE.
There are branding packages. I installed XFCE and it looked abysmal. But then I found that there was XFCE branding, SUSE XFCE branding upstream, so it looked like the original developers. But annoyingly, it doesn't even choose to install one of those by default, so you just get an icon broken, awful-looking desktop.
So I wasted the rest of my time trying to get that to work.
And did it fit on a Blu-ray, your massive...
It wasn't that big. It wasn't that big. In fact, it was like 2.5 gig.
Good grief.
Well, the image... Image. Mine was like 600 megs.
That's feasible, I think.
We've got to put this online.
You know how big developer libraries are. It quickly gets out of control. And, I was able to build stuff in Kdevelop, unfortunately, pretty quickly, because I couldn't find a Qt creator. But kind of disappointing, and it took a lot longer than I think all of us anticipated. How about you, Paul? Do you have any luck?
So my distro, I started off like Mike with the Juice pattern, which is just enough operating system, which means no KDE, no GNOME, just give me X and some the kernel and stuff, and then adding bits to it. And I added Mono Complete, of course.
Oh right.
And then I added the Flash Player.
Good. Right.
And then Java Sun.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
My distro is called Flamix. I spent a good half an hour drawing a nice background image of this Flamix logo. and my slogan is Bring It On Flamers.
Is that GNU / Flamix?
No, it's just Flamix right now.
And did that work as the desktop background? Because I never got that to work.
No. Instead, it's the boot splash screen. I get that. So it says Flamix when you're booting up.
So how do you change the desktop? Because that was going to be one of my killer features.
This is what I'm saying. I couldn't get the test drive to work because on my laptop it was not connected to the ports. But you guys seem to have more luck with
test drives.
Test drive is where I changed it. But to make things even better, I actually included on the desktop some files that are unique to my distro. You can't get anywhere else. I've included the complete Hudzilla Coding Academy source code for the first 15 projects.
Wow.
I include the latest version of my Python OpenGL library gloss. And I've included the very first alpha release of my new game for Linux, Brain Priority, which isn't released yet. So the only way you can get it is by downloading Flamix.
And downloading Mono.
I think my full package was 350 megs. I had to start adding more things like Emacs to try and pad out the information.
How did you log in? What login manager did you have, man?
GDM.
GDM, but it still fit into 350 megs.
Yeah, it was
megs.
Small. Yeah, I added Emacs. I had all the mono stuff. I had a Java, and it kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
What window
Abbey
manager?
Word,
desktop?
Abbey Word, GNumeric, GNOME.
GNOME.
So it's about 550 now, I think. So, right. Yeah, it's still pretty light. And then mine builds in about 4 minutes. It's really,
oh, really?
Fast. Yeah, it's really fast. So I downloaded it, and it dumped me in the command line.
It's a proper flavor.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was great, because it brings up the EULA, because I put a EULA in there saying, if by using this distro you agree to whinge as much as you can, and post arrogant emails to me saying why I'm wrong and you are right.
Brilliant. Now you need to host it in the most flaming, flame-worthy place possible.
MSDN.
Coplex.
It boots you into a command line.
It did!
But it's got a flash player.
It did. It said XDM, skipped. I didn't say skip XDM. What does skip XDM for? I chose run level 5 for a reason. So it just dumped you in the command line. But you can log in as Flame King, password Flame King, and you're off with your flash player. I will try and fix it. It doesn't go up till tomorrow, does it?
Well,
it's actually Wednesday we're recording this, listeners.
Ooh,
pop quiz.
This is from the past.
From the past. Yes, I may try and fix the command line breakingness by tomorrow.
So it actually starts in graphic mode.
I know, exactly. Wow. Welcome to the 20th century.
I didn't see the bit where you specify a password. So the first build I did, I was locked out.
Oh, it always asks you for a password.
No, it didn't ask me for a password.
It talks in Linux.
Yeah, talks in Linux. There you go.
Talks in Linux.
Talks in Linux.
Where
yeah.
does it say this?
It does say it somewhere.
It's on there, yeah. It's very clearly marked.
Is it in German or something?
No, it's all very clearly marked. So I quite enjoyed the experience. I've got to admit, it's a very powerful thing. I don't like the fact that it's still SUSE, and they still very, very clearly brand everything SUSE Studio, so it's not going to work for me.
You could get rid of that.
You yeah. could. You hack your way out of it a little yeah. bit. But all the, you know, now running SUSE config is printed everywhere. At least Fedora had the goodness to rename it all to system config, blah, 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 rather than Red Hat everything. So I think that's one place where Ubuntu's really leading the way with quickly. Anyway. Tangent.
Well, I happened to see over to Andrew's brilliant desktop background. Was that the centre of your distribution?
That was, yeah. That was the big idea. That's really going to revolutionise the desktop metaphor.
Yeah.
But sadly, it was used only as a splash screen.
Yeah. I know. I couldn't.
I found that really frustrating because I'd taken ages. I made it. Is there any point explaining it when it's going to go up on the website anyway?
I want to hear what it is.
Well, yeah, briefly, I mean.
All right, then.
It was neat.
In words, I divided the desktop up into 5 sections, each of them different colours.
That's 4.
That's 5. What do you mean it's 5? I'm explaining it. No one can see the doodle that I'm drawing.
I know, I can see it. Carry on.
I divided it into quarters with an extra little bit taken out of one of them.
All right.
And I labelled them tutorials, features, regulars, other, and next issue stuff. Because when I'm working on an issue, I always put I just put everything on my desktop folder. So by the end of the month, when we come to the end of finishing an issue of Linux format, my desktop is a right mess and I can't find anything. So by labelling areas of the desktop, I thought, you know, you could just put stuff in a specific yeah. place, and it's all in one folder, so you can see everything all at once. But you know, you don't have to scan through all the file names looking for things, as I sometimes do.
That's a brilliant, that was a brilliant idea.
They should patent it.
It was quite. Yeah. I should you, Graham, cut that bit out. So yeah, the really big idea I had was I changed the EULA to just say be excellent to one another.
Excellent.
Not just good.
Excellent. And apart from that, I was really after making a sort of SUSE-ified version of Ubuntu where I stripped out all the extraneous packages. I got rid of Vim and replaced it with Gedit. I got rid of OpenOffice and replaced it with Abbey Word and Numeric, just because I like them better. I just got rid of things that I don't like and replaced them with stuff that I do like.
Good.
I added the PHP MySQL Apache
because I found it such an unutterable pain trying to install WordPress the other week that I thought, you know, I'll let other people stand on my giant shoulders. And what else?
So your distro is a web serving machine out the box.
It's for web serving. It's for using Abbey Word rather than OpenOffice. It's for Rhythmbox, and there is no Vim or Emacs on it. And it's in GNOME. It's based on the GNOME package, so it comes in at. It's quite large. It's 1.4 giga.
Giga.
Gigabees.
And what's its name? Does it have a name?
Oh, that's the one thing that I couldn't be bothered to change. So it's called Andrew's GNOME.
That's good, though. That's branding by itself.
Yeah.
It's a revolutionary internet communicator.
But anyway, 1.4 gigs means it fits on my USB stick.
Or two CDs.
Which is fine. It doesn't need to fit on anybody else's USB stick. It fits on my USB stick. But I don't like all the green, and I don't like Yast. So my customization's only went so far. It's still not something I'm entirely happy with.
Are you proud of your work?
I'm more proud of the website that I did this morning, actually. The website the website that took 2 minutes.
Has that got a URL?
It's localhost.
No. Where's GeoCities when you need it, eh?
I found loads of files at localhost the other day. It was great. And then I went to 127.0.0.1, and I found all this music as well. I recommend everybody goes there. It's full of stuff.
Cool. Well, yeah. I think that's a pretty good overview of our experiences. Now, we have to choose something for our next challenge.
Oh, no.
Now, we did go through some of the comments from a few weeks ago, and we have chosen one.
Was it porting GNOME to haiku what you chose?
Yeah, porting GNOME to
haiku. I'm already doing that. I'm working on it.
What we chose, I'm sorry, I didn't make a note of whose idea
it
this was.
It was Anonymous Penguin.
Oh, well,
didn't leave a
it
name.
It was Anonymous Penguin. Very talented.
He's my best mate.
He's prolific.
Yeah. It's a good idea. The idea is to use Ubuntu's Warty Warthog. Warthog. Warthog.
Andy Warhol.
Use Andy Warhol's Warthog.
Use Andy Warhol's Warthog.
So that's
Warty Warthog, Ubuntu
4.10.
Yeah. 4.10.
2004.
Right, so we're going to use this exclusively for the next 2 weeks.
Sheesh.
Exclusively.
That's the
yeah.
plan.
Yeah.
But the magazine isn't finished.
Well, we pretend we do.
But I might put VMware on there.
I might run it in VMware.
Yeah, that's possible too. So for the next 2 weeks, Warty Warthog.
Yeah.
As our main distro.
Distro is from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And we'll see how things have progressed or not.
Isn't 2004 technically 6 years ago?
Well, it's 4.10.
So it's five and a bit
years.
Yeah.
So ours is rounding down.
Okay. That's rounding up.
I'm a pessimist.
That sounds like a great challenge.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
Because, I mean, you know, recently I installed Red Hat 6.2 for a laugh, and that was a lot of fun. So.
Was it really just for a laugh? You just was sat there bored and thought, no, I really need some cheering up.
It was actually for the Linux format covered it.
And with such wonderful blasts from the past, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week, our new-ish, but not quite so new anymore, in the hot seat section, and our not-so-open open ballot. Why are we so cynical about Linux?
Paul, while you're there, let me stop you for a second. We got an email in from a reader.
Wow.
Matt Elliott, and he wants to know, he's looking for a new Linux laptop. He's saying he wants a Core 2 Duo upwards, 4 gigs of RAM, and he'd like it to run Compiz Effects. So he's looking for something reasonably high-end, but he can't find anything. So he's looking for our suggestions. A MacBook Pro and installed Linux on it. I looked earlier today on the Dell website for Linux machines, and rather distressingly, on the UK Dell website for home computers, there's only one Linux machine, and it's a netbook. So that's not the kind of thing he's looking for. So my recommendation would be to go to the Linux Emporium, linuxemporium.co.uk. They sell Linux laptops. They can be fairly pricey, but there's some good machines there, like IBM machines or Lenovo machines.
It's a real shame that you're paying a premium to get a free OS.
It is sad, yeah. I mean, they should be knocking down the price. I don't know what it's like on the US side. I didn't check Dell US side, but perhaps they have a lot more Linux-powered machines. I hope so.
They have some more, yeah. And the thing is, it has got worse in the Dell UK. They used to provide more choice.
They did used to provide more, didn't they? Yeah.
The main concern, if you think you're buying a Linux laptop, is going to be the GPU, because you're going to want Compiz, as he said.
Mm.
And that means I would definitely recommend an Intel GPU. Obviously, thanks to Nouveau and ATI, more cards work, but Intel's guaranteed to work.
They do work, yeah.
Intel network cards, guaranteed to work. Intel wireless, guaranteed to work. So the more Intel bits you get, the better.
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding.
This
other processors are available.
Yeah.
Cyrix.
Well, CPU, I don't really mind, you know, get your like.
CPU doesn't really matter, but yeah, I've had the best experience with, you know, I never buy high-end stuff, I just buy generic Intel stuff and it works, yeah.
Yeah, it works really, really well too. The Compiz looks awesome on Intel. Mm. It's incredible. And if you do want to email us, folks, please do. We do want to read out your emails if we get any more in. Email us at paul.hudson@futurenet.com. And be nice, because that's our inbox and we're very sensitive people deep down.
Don't flood it.
It's time for Discovery of the Week.
Yay! With your host, brilliant, Andrew Gregory.
That's me, the Andrew James Gregory MA.
The very reverend.
You are in the magazine as Operations Overlord now, by the way.
Oh, cool.
I bet you didn't even notice, did you?
No, of course not.
Can I change my title as well?
Am I supposed
then,
to look
please?
At the pages?
No, you can't, sorry.
Yes, thanks to the unique way this podcast is funded, Discovery of the Week now comes at you fortnightly.
Cutbacks.
Cutbacks. Thanks, BBC. You're doing a great job. Apart from egregious cultural heinousity,
where are you going with this?
Excellent.
I like this part.
Have we discovered anything?
I've discovered something.
What, Mike? Tell us.
I've discovered something. There's not a program or a game or anything like that.
Is it vaguely Linux related?
I remember that. It is vaguely Linux related. In fact, it's very Linux related. I wanted to find out how big the binary for Emacs is because of something I was doing.
Oh, it's ginormous, I bet.
For the magazine.
Was it just for laughs?
No, I wanted to...
Is it expressed with an exponent by any chance?
I wanted to compare it with something, so I installed Emacs. I thought, right, let's have a look at the binary. So there I am at the command line. ls-l user bin Emacs. Ah, but that's a symlink to etc alternative Emacs. Okay, what's etc alternative Emacs symlink to? That's a symlink to user bin Emacs 22. Right, that must be the binary. No. User bin Emacs 22 is a symlink to etc alternatives Emacs 22.
Huh?
Right? And then, so what's that? And etc alternatives Emacs 22 is a symlink to user bin Emacs 22 GTK. So what is user bin Emacs is actually a symlink to a symlink to a symlink to a symlink to a real binary. Now, this is Debian's alternative system, which is normally very good. It allows you to have like user bin Java, and you can switch it between various Java implementations. But once you get to 5 levels of redirection for a single binary, I think it might have gone a bit over the top. So I've discovered that etc alternatives is great, but it can be a bit silly.
That is, I thought symlinks fell down after a certain number of symlinks.
If you symlink two directories to each other for fun, then it does tell you that there are too many levels of nested symlinks, but clearly 5 is enough for Emacs. I mean, Emacs is quite a large piece of software anyway.
Yeah.
Large in a, you know, just has
large in an ego
big
sense.
Genes, you know. It's not fat or anything. It's just big bones.
Big genes.
Big genes.
So if you've got a Y chromosome that's bigger than someone else's Y chromosome.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Mike.
How big was it? That was what I was expecting you to say was your discovery.
I lost track after the fourth symlink.
33 petabytes.
it couldn't be worked out. So yeah, there's my discovery.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
You can't beat that, can you?
Well, you know, this is related to your happiness discovery. Okay. I discovered bliss.
Bliss?
Yeah.
Is that better than happiness?
Sounds like a drug.
It is better than happiness, but it's only lasts for a very short period of time.
Oh, well.
So it's a trade-off. It's a Java application that grabs album covers for your music collection, and it does it automatically. It does it in the background, and it does it with a web interface, and it's very cool if you happen to run a squeeze box or keep your music collection on a big hard drive. Whenever you add a new album, it'll go off and try and download the cover art from what I presume to be legitimate places, but it does a very good job of
it. .ru server somewhere. Yeah.
It does a really good job of it, and I've been looking for something like this for a long time. It's brand new as well, and there's been 2 or 3 updates in the last couple of weeks.
So the big question is, has it found all the covers for your super obscure music that nobody's ever heard of?
Well, I haven't actually let it run wild. because it won't. I couldn't get Java installed on my NAS, which is a different story. But but regardless of that, I think it's a great tool because if you actually look into it, there are very few things that do it on Linux. There are some big full-blown applications, but not if you want to run a simple script. There's an old Perl script that does the job quite well, but this is the best way of doing it. And it's got some pretty good rules, and the user interface through the web GUI is great. So if you need web album art, it's the best way of getting it.
Isn't it rather optimistic to call a Java app Blizz?
Yeah, possibly. I you know, if something does the job, I don't mind. If you're leaving it resident on a NAS box, if you can get it to run, I'm a bit worried about the amount of memory it might take up, but I couldn't get it to work.
Shame.
Paul, I see you have your iPhone in your hand. Are you frantically scanning the internet for a discovery right now?
I'm reorganising my home screen. Well, I'm killing time while you guys talk about your lame discoveries while my awesome discoveries come up.
Well, hang on, I've got two discoveries to come. Let's just...
That's true. Yeah, we don't want to burn out early.
Yeah.
So I've got two. Is it my turn? Can I go? Is it me?
It's totally your
turn. Can I go? Okay. One is tfury.com. TEEfury.com. It's where I got my current t-shirt from.
The tea party t-shirt.
Rock out with your Spock out t-shirt.
That's great.
It is great, yeah. The t-shirts are $9, and they're only available for one day, and the artist gets $1 of that money. And I shipped it to the UK for another $8, I think. So total price was like £12, which is cheaper than you can get a t-shirt for in the shops here. So I can get a nice t-shirt, fund artist, and get it shipped over here for less than it costs to go to the store and buy one, which is lame, but that's life. So anyway, tfury.com, different t-shirt every day. It's really, really cool. The other one is particularly awesome, I think, is shadyurl.com.
Oh,
and what it does is you give it a URL that transforms into something that looks really suspicious.
That's
so for example, here's an innocent URL that's been transformed to this. http://5z8.info/malicious-cookie_d5d2_hate-minorities. Is that great? So yeah, it transforms any URL into something completely dodgy.
And is that what, lolcats or something?
No, that's Nickelodeon in that case, SpongeBob SquarePants. So it's something completely innocent, but it transforms what looks terrible. shadyurl.com. Those are my two. Aren't they awesome?
Nice Linux links, yep.
They are indeed awesome. Mine are quite good as well. The first one I discovered while trying to take a screenshot on Windows is that it's really hard to take a screenshot on Windows. And it's actually much, much easier and better on Linux because you just have to press the print screen thing, or you can do it with GIMP, or you can do it with tools, applications, take a screenshot.
You can, but it still irritates me no end on those.
Why?
Why?
What's irritating?
Maybe they've fixed it, but it certainly, as of a few weeks ago in my box, if I choose any GNOME menu item, I want to sort of take a screenshot of it. Look, here's where the menu item is, and press print screen doesn't work while the menu's open. I have to close the menu, and then fire up print screen. Or fire up print screen, ignore picture it took, take another one with a 3-second delay, and then press the menu quickly and hover over the menu. You can't press print screen while the menu's highlighted.
It should let you do that, shouldn't it?
Maybe they fixed it. But previously it didn't do it. Right. And it was very irritating.
I don't know in GNOME.
Well, this is not a problem I've ever encountered.
It's probably just a GNOME problem.
Yeah,
you know what GNOME's like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
So there we go. Linux in being easier to use than Windows win. My other discovery is actually honestly a discovery of last fortnight.
And, fake.
Is that allowed?
It is allowed because I'm
false advertising.
I'm the boss of this section.
That's true.
And that discovery is that on the website, Graham, could you remind me what that URL was that I was talking about last fortnight? The one about the
is this what the discovery is?
Yeah, that's it.
You can read my mind.
GNU. Three discoveries of the week. The GNU.org frequently asked questions.
Page, oh, yes.
Where the people.
The
people were talking about how important it is to say GNU/Linux and not just GNU Linux.
Yes.
The FAQ related to that comes in at many, many thousands of words. It's longer than the US Constitution. This is my awesome discovery. It's 8,500 words long.
How many US Constitutions is that?
The US Constitution, I think, was 8,200.
Right.
Okay. And to be fair, it is a masterpiece of clear, concise writing.
Do you think if in the US Constitution they had to put GNU/ before a lot of things like America, it would make a difference?
GNU/America.
Clearly, you know, the tenets at stake in GNU/freedom are 300 words more important than the whole of the United States of America.
I've just thought of something. I wonder if when you word count a document, GNU/Linux is counted as two words.
That's a very important question, and well worth investigating.
Yeah, it changes the whole dynamic of everything in the world.
And now it's time for the third installment of our always exciting In the Hot Seat section. This week it's Graham.
I'm scared.
Are you psyched?
No, I'm just worried.
Well, get psyched.
Because I don't know that much about grub.
I've spun it 2 weeks in a row now. Mike, do you want to spin the wheel?
I'll give it a go. I've never done anything like
You've
this before.
Be careful.
All right, then.
A bit rickety.
Well, yeah. So you can trust me. I think I know what I'm doing. All right.
Go for it.
Here we go. Right.
No.
What? Why is it doing that?
Fail.
What,
Mike, you spin it the wrong way.
Oh, come on. There's a wrong way.
Has he broken it?
No, stop. It'll be right. Come here. Let me have a go.
I give up.
That's much better, Andrew. Oh, it is grub! It's grub!
You guys.
Okay, it's Og. You're saved.
It's Og.
It's Og. which is a big topic. Og, I guess.
Og, what's that? I'll leave the...
You'll figure it out. It's what Canonical isn't using. Yeah. You've got 1 minute. I'll give you no gestures because it never actually works.
It's okay.
Oh, you've got an iPhone.
Oh, it's one of those rip-off things.
Are you ready?
Yeah, okay.
Take it away.
Og is a container format, which is always a really obscure term for something when people just want to play something back. It can contain lots of different open codecs, including the commonly used Vorbis and Theora for video, which was a very contentious issue when it came to creating the HTML5 standard. And Apple, who don't do much good for the open source community, seemed to veto Theora's inclusion in the HTML spec in preference for H.264573.89, which was their MPEG-4 based video format of preference, which is now used by most HTML5 based video on the internet, which is now taking dominance, which Theora could have done a much better job at. But Og Vorbis, the audio codec, is much better than MP3 for the same amount of space that it takes. MP3 sounds crufty, and even worse, it's totally encumbered by billions of patents, just like Unisys's GIF, and it gets into all parts of your computer, and it's awful, and Og Vorbis is brilliant, sounds so much better, and everybody should encode their music codec using it.
Impressive. Yeah, good timing. Exactly a minute.
Passionately
we should use this iPhone thing more often.
Just so listeners know, that was not read out or anything. That was just 1 minute of Graham going at it.
Yeah, I didn't even need my notes.
And that brings us on to the open ballot. Well, I say open, but I mean closed ballot, really.
You better fill me.
The closed ballot this week is really a follow-on from the podcast comments we had previously, because a number of you complained vigorously that we are too negative. I think it's important that we address your complaints on the air, you know, try and clear the air, as it were, and feel good about ourselves once more. So some of the comments we had were some... called us haters, quite frankly.
Haters.
Particularly like KDE.
Haters gonna hate.
And, well, for example, you know, Mark said, love the podcast, but what's with all the KDE hate? KDE 4X, which is like some sort of beer, I think, is pretty 3D usable and modern. GNOME is tired. Sorry, it's playing dumbed down, and I don't understand why some technical Linux users complain about too many features and tweaks, and the same breath extol the virtues in OS that you can tweak to your heart's delight. Whereas Dylan says, seriously, guys, I can't believe how much ye disrespect OpenOffice and the developers. OpenOffice maybe isn't pretty, but it's certainly very functional. Try it before dissing it some more.
Lolbutt.jpg. Put my troll face on.
So why are we so negative? Why are you? I'm not negative. Why are you guys so negative?
Was it because we mentioned KDE? Because I didn't think it was that much different last time. I don't know why we got so much hate.
Maybe we're always negative.
Well, maybe we are, but I don't feel that we are.
We were quite bad last time.
It just so happened, I think, last time that there was an alignment of badness in the world of open source. You know, and it just, you know, we weren't enthusiastic about a new KDE release, or Migu, you know. Sorry.
Are you calling KDE SC 4.4 some sort of axis of evil?
Well, you know, I don't want to have to defend my KDE use. I saw that somebody said as a challenge we should perhaps do a presentation at Academy.
Yes. You know. See if you can avoid getting lynched, which is interesting, really.
Which is interesting considering I have done a presentation at Academy. But, you know, I just feel like we're being objective. I really do. We believe passionately about what we're talking about. And we love Linux. We all use it almost exclusively. For a long time we have used it. And we care about its future. We can't blindly say, I don't feel that we should blindly say, this is great just for the sake of it, just to make everybody feel good about it.
Just in the hot seat all over again.
Sorry.
I agree. I mean, I think a lot of it comes from the fact, like you say, we use Linux all the time. We use it as our operating systems. We use it. It's our work as well. So if you use something as a hobby just for a couple of hours here and there, you will have a different view to it than what we do. We use it more, so we see more problems and more flaws. I mean, it's obvious, of course, it's a brilliant operating system and the technology is fantastic, but we're going to spot the flaws, and I think it's worth talking about those. It doesn't mean we're haters or anything like that. It's just being with... There are plenty of places on the internet where people are just, you know, say, oh, free software is wonderful, and not really looking at the longer picture. Or
there's very little criticism, actually.
There is very little,
And that's the same thing that nobody important says. Actually, I've noticed that, yes, Tux Radar is a negative podcast sometimes. Considering the huge lack of Linux software negativity, however, I'll take someone talking about how something could be a lot better. If you want a podcast where people spooge happiness and praise, pick a card, any card, they're a dime a dozen.
Yeah, it's not like we're sitting there going, oh, Linux sucks and stuff like that. You know, we're passionate about it. We want things to change. And yeah, so we do rant occasionally, and perhaps we ranted a bit too much in the last one, but passion.
There are some known targets, aren't there?
Yeah.
Things that really set us off, like a KDE release.
Oh, man.
Or openoffice.org, Pulse Audio, and Gecko. Any of those four, and we're off, basically.
So basically...
RPM
occasionally,
CPIO, yeah. But that deserves
CPIO,
it.
CPIO, yes. Andrew, what do you think? Are we negative?
I think that if people didn't get angry about stuff, then we'd still have slavery and we wouldn't be allowed to vote and other things like that. So it's not necessarily bad for us to give things a good kicking once in a while.
Do you think we've lost our objectivity, though?
I think... Well, you're the only one here who uses KDE. Presumably that's because you prefer it...
Yeah,
to any other desktop environment. You're not just some masochist. But I don't like KDE, and
that's the way that it is.
I don't really think it's whenever there's a KDE release, I don't think it's worth me saying, oh, I don't like KDE at 4.4 and then at 4.5, then again at 4.6. I think that's a bit of a waste of time. But you know, it's good for. Oh no, I've run out of words now. Sorry.
Well, some guy called, I think, Man or Manny, I like Man though, said, I do feel the community needs some objective critical introspection, but guys, there's a limit. When someone utters, I won't try KDE 4.4, it's crap. I just wonder why you have a podcast about Linux news. Surely all of you should at least try it before bashing it. Why should I try KDE?
I can't bother compiling it.
I understand.
We did try,
didn't we? So we did, for a start. One thing that goes through my mind when I read these comments, you know, they're saying, you know, you should all try, blah, 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 and KDE, blah, blah, blah. And I think, well, you know, it's my podcast. it's my opinion here. I'm not trying to give you some carefully, objective news.
This isn't Wikipedia.
No, it's not Wikipedia. It's not Linux format. It's something very different to that. It's our personalities coming through it more. And I don't really want to try KDE 4.4, because it would have to be a light year different to KDE 4.3 for me to like it.
It'd have to be very simple for me to try it, anyway.
I will try KDE 5.
Same here, definitely.
I will try that, because I want to see what they're doing. I tried KDE 4. Mm. We all tried. Was it 4.2 we switched to?
Yeah, 4.2 or 4.3.
You had 4.1, didn't you?
No, I tried 3.5.
3.5, that was it.
I tried 3.5, and I tried one of the four releases.
So, we all tried 4.x. We all gave it a try, and we all tried 5.x, guaranteed. But I don't feel I have some sort of public service need to try out all the new KDE 4 releases. I've got better things to do with my time.
I mean, the sad thing is that I know the three of you quite well, and KDE have kind of messed it up. And not trying to sound negative and re-dig up that old argument again, but I know that you're all open-minded enough. And if KD4 was right, if they'd done as good a job as they had with the 3 transition, I know that you'd been using it and you would have said that it was good. And, you know, it's not just us. There's a lot of people reflecting exactly the same comment. I mean, KD is getting a lot better with every successive release, and it'd be a great idea if they call one of them 5. You know, and I'm sure you guys will like it.
So the Project Mohave in Windows 7/Vista.
Yeah.
Where they rebranded.
Yeah,
rebranding. Yeah, that's a good idea. This kid, you could do it.
Call it KD5.
Yeah, I think.
Ditch the Fallout X curse. This is all name. You know.
Cover up half of the options, put them away somewhere. It'd be a lot more. I'd have a lot more fun with it. So then, there's nothing personal in this.
But it wouldn't be KDE then if you covered up half the options. I don't. There's no point changing something to make people who don't like it. That's like the way.
But the thing is, the problem I have with KDE hasn't changed. It's when you go to things like settings. And there are a bazillion options in Conqueror. And that's good. They want these options. I understand that. But these are options they're going to set once when they first run KDE and not look at it again. They've got KDE just the way they want it. That's awesome, the fact that it can do anything basically it can do. They set it once and forget about it. They can put these away in a different dialogue for advanced users only or whatever, or a special settings thing, turn it on, and suddenly, wow, across the whole desktop, all thousands of options available. But the default thing for most users doesn't have these. The day-to-day options set is quite clear. I spent ages digging through the Conqueror things, trying to find settings. You shouldn't have to do that. I mean, if I remember correctly, there were 4 different configure things under the settings menu. Configure menu, configure Conqueror, configure something else, and configure something else. It shouldn't be like that.
Right, but we're not complaining.
So some negativity is completely justified and necessary. But do we go too far? Should we make an effort to you know find things that are positive?
Nice tumbleweed.
Ages ago in North Carolina, I watched some American TV, and it was a local TV station, and it had like the news. And, you know, news, some guy shot dead, police chase, whatever, this kind of thing. And afterwards was good things near you. And it had, like, you know, like the dreamy piano music. Good things near you. And it talked about all the wonderful little community projects. You can go, like, you know, yard sales and Girl Scouts and stuff.
That's quite cool.
It provided a bit of balance. Yeah, it's interesting to see some balance in American news sites. But, yeah, so maybe we could do the same thing.
No, but that's a nice idea. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but you can lose perspective when you spend all time criticising something.
Yes. So you're saying we have lost perspective?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a good thing. Maybe we should... Well, we do have different parts of the podcast that focus on something we've discovered or something.
Yeah, we do.
You know, we do talk about the good things.
Mm. Discovery of the week. Check out this cool
Discovery of the week is never a roundup of rubbish software, is it?
Hatred of
t-shirt sites.
Yeah. Although mine was slightly negative today, but, you know, that was a one-off. I'll have a game next week or some kanji tester.
Yeah, well, also in the magazine, you know, we do have hot picks and stuff. We do try and highlight the very best free software. And I think, to be fair, on the website, generally, we're quite positive on TuxRadar.
Yeah, I mean, we send our disks to lugs and things as
we
well.
We do, yeah, so but, you know, do this with Drupal, make this with Python, look at this cool stuff you can do. Because we do want to encourage and support and build up. And it's not really opinion-based TuxRadar, generally. It's only the podcast where opinions sort of come through.
This is just us.
It's just us, exactly. It's just us.
But we want Linux to succeed. That is so important.
We used to.
I don't. No, we do.
Only joking.
Only joking. No, we do.
No. Yeah, we do.
I don't like it when Sky Sports talks about a 0-0 draw between Wigan and Bolton as if it were the best game in the world. I'd like them to sometimes be a bit negative and say, no, that was rubbish. Watch Arsenal next week.
All you Wigan fans, forget it. Yeah, we could try that. The football section.
Let's be happier, but not be like Sky Sports.
Not be glowing. No. And with that pointless self-justification, we come to the end of our podcast, episode number 3.
I've just realised why I'm so negative. It's because every single time you forget to give me my chance for the one last thing.
You're blaming me?
Yeah.
You want a fight?
Well, right, in the car park, now. Actually, after the one more thing, okay. I'm sure that's what our readers want to hear. It turns out that today is the 10-year anniversary of March 2000. So I was...
amazing!
I was looking online on the internet. I thought, what actually happened with Linux in March 2000? And I thought, well, let's ask you guys first. I'm sure you were all around using Linux in March 2000. think of what happened. What could happen? A few releases here and there. A few things happen.
Mandrake. 6, maybe 7.
Interesting. You could be right.
Fedora wasn't out then.
No,
neither was Ubuntu.
But there was a release of Red Hat Linux. Anyone want to guess the number?
1. 6.2.
It was 6.2. Correct, oh. Graham. 1 point for Graham. And Graham won. Anybody else? X386, there was a new version of that.
4.
Yep, 4.0. Wow, you guys are good. And
KDE 2.0. Something?
Two. I don't know.
2.1?
I don't know.
Slackware 5.6.
That's interesting. It was the first release of the Helix GNOME desktop, if anybody remembers that.
Oh, yeah.
The big financed company.
Which became Zimian, which was snapped up by Novell. And March 2000 was the first time that Apache reached 60% of all web servers.
Hasn't it been downhill since then?
I don't know.
I think it has been.
I thought it got up to like the 70s at some point.
But it's way down recently. It's hovering around 50-something% now, I think.
Everybody's running Boa. But there we go. March 2000. A great time.
Wasn't some Linux magazine released 10 years ago as well?
It was. Yes. Oh, hang on a minute. I worked on it as well. Linux Format, issue 1.
Sweet.
10 years ago. Well, April 2000.
It's amazing. Happy birthday, us.
Hooray! Yeah.
Good work, people.
Yeah.
That was good.
And with such pointless self-congratulation, we come to the real end of our podcast.
The positivity.
I know. We come to the real end of our podcast. You can find all the notes on the website, of course. Hopefully, you'll also find all our distros on the website, which will sadly be torrentable only because Graham's is so damn big.
Can you strip it down a bit, Graham?
And of course, don't forget you can email us and we will read out the very best emails, if we get any at all, to paul.hudson@futurenet.com. And don't forget our awesome subscriptions deal. It is so awesome, you should already have checked it out. If not, do it now.
It's
at tuxradar.com/subscribe. Don't miss it, you will kick yourself. Bye.
Bye. It's such a nice day to be on the main stage. All class skipping violence and ordinarily it's scary, baby. I don't feel so very good, like you say I should. Oh.